All right, so last week I said something in my message that I wonder if it hasn't been sitting with you a little, at least I hope it's been sitting with you a bit. It's a truth we found in Jesus' words about laying down your life for your friend, and the truth was this, that relationships cost. We said last week, relationships cost. They are not free. You got to lay something down in order for a relationship to be good. And one of the things we talked about was that we said the price you're willing to pay for something expresses its value. And I just want to say it again. The price you're willing to pay for something, even a relationship, the degree to which you're willing to lay down yourself, you sacrifice. And when we say that, we mean your comfort, your convenience, the degree to which you're willing to do that tells you how valuable someone really is to you. And we've kind of picked up from there a little bit today. You saw our Antiques Roadshow style drama earlier where we saw people trying to get their friends appraised so they could understand what the value was, getting outside opinions. Would you say this friend is more valuable or is this a less valuable one? And we want to carry that a next step today. What makes a relationship valuable? How do you know what you're looking at? I mean, when you get honest about your relationships, how do you know whether someone's going to bring value or not? Well, I would suggest to you today that value has a lot to do with whether or not your relationship with that person helps you fulfill your destiny. We're going to talk about that today, but first, let me just give you a quick story. A few years ago, a guy named John Collins, who lives here in the Bay Area, he decided he wanted to try and get into the Guinness Book of World Records in a very unique category, longest paper airplane flight. He had been designing paper airplanes since he was a kid. He actually studied origami, the Japanese art of folding, and so he started pursuing the record. 3 or 4 straight years, he tried this, but he couldn't beat it. There was always someone at the contest whose plane went further. And so after spending some time doing some thinking, he realized it didn't have to do with anything with the design of his planes. It had to do with his throwing arm. He thought that his planes were better than anyone else's, but his arm, not so much. So in 2012, he decided to go and get some help. He went to former Cal quarterback Joe Ayoub. And he asked him, would you work with me to beat this record? We'll use my designs, my plane. We'll use your arm. They spent a year working together, practicing. This was the result. Watch this video. I have never seen someone so excited about something so insignificant, right? So that day, these two guys in that airplane hangar, they broke a record that had stood since 2003. Their flight went 226 feet and 10 inches. All right, John Collins, now the world record holder, he's gone on to do public appearances and he writes books, appears on all sorts of talk shows. He calls himself the paper airplane man, and he has fulfilled his destiny, his dream. But here's the thing, he could not have done it without someone else helping to make that happen. All right, another quick story. Currently in Washington, D.C., there is a massive memorial to Ulysses S. Grant. If you've been there, maybe you've seen this. It stands at the end of the reflecting pool, right in the shadow of the Capitol building. Very prominent place, very important place. And if you're walking by, this statue would be so hard to miss. It's Ulysses S. Grant riding atop his war stallion. And this is there to celebrate his leadership in the Union Army during the Civil War. Symbolizes the force of the human will, a strong man who stand against the storm when all others have shrunk back. Okay, 2.5 miles away in a pleasant but otherwise uninteresting city park, there stands a much more commonplace memorial, a statue of a lesser known figure named John Rawlins. This statue, hardly ever noticed by visitors, In fact, they don't know where to put it. It's been moved around about 8 times now. You probably don't even know who John Rawlins is. Let me tell you. Rawlins had been a lawyer in Illinois prior to the Civil War, and while he was there, he met Ulysses S. Grant, and he became his chief of staff. Well, Rawlins knew that Grant had character flaws, especially his weakness for alcohol. And so, at the beginning of the war, he made Grant make a pledge that he would abstain from getting drunk. Throughout the war, anytime Grant threatened to fall away from that promise, his friend Rawlins would plead with him and support him until he could get things back on track. Now, who do we remember? We remember Ulysses S. Grant as this strong, solitary figure, and he was strong. I don't want to take away from that. But what we know, without his friend's love and support, he would never have been able to even get in that saddle. All right, what both of these stories illustrate, one kind of unimportant and trivial, the other one very important, is something you already know. You've heard this. Behind every great person in history is a humble person who helped make them great. Isn't that true? Behind every great person you hear about, you meet, you know there is someone behind them, often behind the scenes, sometimes not getting a lot of credit, not getting a lot of glory, but somebody who makes that person great, someone who helps that other person fulfill their destiny. Now, that's a strong word, destiny, and I don't use it very often because as we talked about in a series this past winter called To Be Determined, I don't believe that your whole life is planned out for you by God. If destiny means that everything's planned out, I don't buy into that. But I do believe some things are planned. And I do believe, regardless of whether or not anything is planned, God has got potential in you. He's put possibility in you. He's got a promise for you. And so maybe we could say this, behind everyone who achieves their full potential is someone who helped them do it. And as we talk about value today, this is what we mean. We need relationships in our life with people of great, great value. And one of the ways that we judge value, maybe the most significant way we figure that out, is to what degree someone helps you move toward your potential, take steps toward your promise, or they hold you back. Now, I don't think I'm telling you anything that you don't already know. I know that in and of itself, it's not necessarily new, helpful information. So let's explore this a little bit further today. Let's go deeper with this, because where this gets to be a challenge in our lives is knowing who's going to be valuable before it's too late. You know you need good people behind you to help you live up to your potential, fulfill your destiny, but how do you know who's good? How do you know who's going to bring value? And in fact, isn't it true that once you get into a relationship, once you get close, it can be hard to know whether someone is actually hurting right now or they're helping? You know that you need good people behind you, but sometimes you don't know if good people are good people until it's too late. Let me ask, you ever wished that you could kind of go back in time and know ahead of time whether a relationship was going to end up not being valuable? Save yourself a lot of heartache? Well, we're going to learn today some things that will help us know ahead of time whether someone is going to end up being valuable or not. You see, someone in the Bible really realized that they needed to have some people behind them too. He saw it was important to surround himself with relationships that could help him do what God had called him to do. But fortunately for you and me, this guy made some mistakes, and we get to learn from them today. Today, I want to share with you the story of Moses and two relationships, one good and one bad, one person he started a relationship with that worked behind the scenes to help him, and one person that just dragged him down, jeopardized his career, his leadership, even his people. And I want to show you these two. We'll kind of use them as case studies so you can see where Moses chose right, where he chose wrong, and you can learn who should be on your team in your life, all right? Now, the first relationship we're going to read about in Exodus 4. But before we put it up, let me just kind of give you some backstory on Moses. I don't want to assume that everyone here knows the Moses story. So I'll just give you a Cliff Notes version, okay? God's people had been in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. And God hears their cries, and he wants to deliver them from slavery, and so he needs someone to do it. He chooses Moses, because Moses, while being an Israelite, he grew up an Egyptian. God shows up in a burning bush to Moses, and he says, I choose you. You are the one that I'm calling to deliver my people. Well, Moses, he's unsure about this. But after a little bit of back and forth, he finally agrees to do it. And after a lot of back and forth with Pharaoh and some plagues, Moses leads the people out of Egypt. They start heading for a new home, this promised land that God wants to give them. So does this make sense so far? This is Moses' destiny. This is the possibility that's been laid out for him. God sees potential in Moses and for Israel because of Moses to lead them to this new promised land. So take a look at the first person who Moses has behind him. I want to just kind of direct your attention to Exodus 4. Now, you are about to see what I think is maybe one of the weirdest passages, one of the weirdest verses in the entire Bible. This verse comes right after the part of the story where God and Moses have decided to work together. Moses has accepted God's call. Take a look. Verse 19, we'll put the beginning of this passage up. It says, now the Lord had said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you are dead. And so Moses took his wife, her name was Zipporah, and he took his sons and he put them on a donkey and they started back to Egypt, and he took the staff of God in his hand. Verse 21, the Lord said to Moses, when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I've given you the power to do. But I'll harden Pharaoh's heart. He won't let the people go. And then I want you to say to Pharaoh, this is what the Lord says, Israel, they're like my firstborn son. And I told you, let my son go so that he may worship me, but you refuse to let him go, so I will kill your firstborn son, Pharaoh. So I just want to make sure you're following this before we look at this very weird verse. This is the agreement. They're going to work together. Moses is on his way to Egypt. He's going to confront Pharaoh, deliver the people. This is his potential, his promise. It is his destiny. Now, I want to ask you to imagine for a second a movie that has just begun, and two people in the movie decide that they want to work together to accomplish something huge. You know, you've seen movies like that before, right? So many movies, buddy cop movies, people who get together to accomplish a big task. You know what the next scene is going to be in that movie, right? After they agree to work together, what happens? The next scene always shows them getting down to business. It's like Mickey training Rocky, right? After they decide to work together. Or it's Danny Ocean and Rusty planning the robbery in Ocean's 11. The next scene is always the two who agreed to work together getting started. Well, look at the next scene for Moses and God that we read about in the very next verse. Verse 24. At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. Cue record scratch. Huh? What? Who wrote this? That's not what's supposed to happen. The next scene should be Moses standing in front of the Israelites saying, hey, I'm here to save you. God sent me. In fact, if you watch the movie, The Ten Commandments, that is the next scene. If you watch The Prince of Egypt, the cartoon version of this story, that's the next scene, but not in the Bible. The very next verse is so random. That's why I say it's one of the weirdest verses in the Bible. It is as if somebody put a whole book of Exodus in a blender, mixed it up. This one popped in right here. Why does God meet Moses at a lodge on the way and prepare to kill him? Well, let me tell you. What the Bible doesn't say here, but we find out later, is that Moses failed to obey one of the God's key commandments. For many generations, God's people had been following his command for them to circumcise their sons. This has been something God had asked them to do to set themselves apart from everybody else. And he said to them, this is going to be a sign that you are my covenant people. I know it's extreme, God said, but this is what we're going to do. And the reason for this, God says, I want you to do something permanent that says I am your God. Well, Moses had not done this with his son. Now, that's fascinating to me because Moses is the deliverer of his people. He's about to be the leader. Like, God's people for quite a few years to come are going to follow this guy. And he hasn't done this? And it is a really big deal to God that Moses has been disobedient in this area. Now, why? Why did Moses not do this circumcision? We don't know. Maybe he asked his son if he was cool with it, and he gave a resounding no, absolutely not. Maybe it's because he was so busy getting ready to go to Egypt that he just kind of forgot about it and ignored this commandment. Maybe because Moses knew that they'd be taking the child into hostile territory, and if things went wrong, this child would have a better chance if no one could tell that he was Jewish, which if you think about it, that shows a lack of faith from the one that God has just appeared to and asked to do something huge. Whatever the reason, Moses does not do this. And so in verse 24, you can see that Moses' potential right there, the possibility, the promise God has put in him is in jeopardy. He's about to lose his life, and for all we know, God's going to go find somebody else. Okay, watch what happens in verse 25. It says, but Zipporah, that's Moses' wife, she took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. Incidentally, this is the second weirdest verse in the Bible. Right there. And then she goes on to say, surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. And so, get this, so the Lord let Moses alone. Okay, weird story, right? I don't even want to spend a whole lot of time rehashing it. We'll just skip through. There's a reason this part gets left out of the movie. Here's what we need to know. Moses' wife, Zipporah, saw Moses about to die, and she steps in and she takes action and saves his life. But more than that, what does she do? She puts him in a position to fulfill God's call and ensure the deliverance of an entire nation. Just think about that. Because of her action, God spares Moses and things move forward in his life as originally planned. Now, that is the first relationship, and it's obvious that's a relationship of value. Someone who helps position and prepare Moses for his destiny. Let me tell you about the other relationship. This is a relationship Moses has with his brother, a guy named Aaron. And this one's a little bit trickier to talk about because Aaron, and you're going to see this in the next few minutes, he was an incredibly important figure in this to Moses. And you might even think as you hear some of this that Aaron's probably a pretty good guy. By the end, you're going to see he's not a person of value. From early on, what we know about Aaron, we know about him because when Moses was going back and forth with God at the burning bush about whether he would be the deliverer, Moses said, God, I can't speak in front of people. I have a stuttering thing. I'm not your guy. And God said, no, use your brother Aaron. He'll be a good one to be your spokesperson. He'll be the mouthpiece. So I just want you to see right away, Aaron, crucial part of the team, right? Very important. Moses needed a spokesperson. He needed support. Moses needed help. He needed somebody to play a role in an area where he was weak. All those things are good, but they may not make Aaron a person of true value. In fact, there's a time later, they're out of Egypt, and Moses and the Israelites are fighting the Amalekites. And so Moses and Aaron and another guy, they go up on top of a hill, and Moses raises the staff of God in his hands. And when he holds the staff above his head, the Israelites start winning the battle. But then when he would drop the staff, because his arms would get tired, when he'd lower them below his head, they'd start losing the battle. Well, the Bible tells us that Aaron and this other guy, they take Moses' arms, and they hold them up for him because he can't do it anymore. Now, you hear that and you think, what a good friend. Surely Aaron, valuable player on the team. That's a relationship of true value. But I would suggest he's not. I mean, think about it. Aaron was necessary, right? But that's not the same as valuable. Somebody had to hold up Moses' hands, but wouldn't you agree that if Aaron didn't, Moses would have found somebody else? I mean, otherwise they're all going to die. I just grab the first guy around and go, hold my arms up. I mean, if Aaron was not around to speak for God and for Moses, wouldn't they have found a different mouthpiece? Okay, let me just time out here because sometimes it's hard for us to see this, that someone is not a person of value in our life because we confuse what someone does when they meet a need of ours with someone who makes us better. Let me say that again. It's really important. We confuse what valuable means. We think it's someone who does what we need, and it's not. It's someone who helps you fulfill your potential, your possibility, and those are two different things. What you need and someone who makes you better. This is a major way we mess this up. We keep people close to us because they help us, not because they make us better. Moses is making this mistake. Let me show you. Here's where this goes bad. Later in their story in Exodus, we read about God calling Moses up Mount Sinai to give him the commandments. And he goes into this mountain and he spends this incredible time with God, and God meets him in a cloud. God gives him the law, the Ten Commandments, all of it. Moses inscribes it on these stone tablets to bring back down to the people. And you should know, part of why God does this so dramatically with this cloud is that the people at the bottom can see the cloud and they can know that their leader who's away is with God. They see the smoke and they can trust that Moses is faithful and he's working for them and he will be back. But instead of patiently waiting, the people start to get anxious. And so they go to Aaron, right? The spokesperson, the right-hand man, the brother of Moses. And they say, "What is taking so long?" Look at 32 verse 1. "When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and they said, 'Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him.'" Now, does Aaron protest? Does he say, "Hey, this is my brother. I've been with him from the beginning. I've seen God do great things. It's going to be fine"? No, not at all. Verse 2. "Aaron answered them, 'Take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me.'" Take a look at verse 4. "He took what they handed him, and he made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. And then they said, 'These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt.'" He makes a golden calf for the people to worship. Well, God sees what's going on and he becomes angry at what's happening down the mountain. He says to Moses, "Go back down there. I'm done with all these people." And Moses pleads with God to change his mind, and it works. God does change his mind, but Moses still has to go down, still has to clean up the mess. In fact, there's a plague that comes on them, and it's a disaster, and much of it is because of these decisions that Aaron makes. But there you have it, the second story, another close relationship to Moses. The first one, where someone moves Moses toward his destiny, his potential. The second, where someone jeopardizes it. Now, back to what I asked at the beginning. How do you know whether someone will be valuable or not? Well, now you have two relationships to look at. Let me give you a couple of things you can know from whether or not someone's going to bring value based on these relationships. You ready? First one, people of value seek to please God, not gain others' approval. Okay, let me show you something in this story. When Moses came down the mountain, the Bible tells us, saw what was going on, he grabbed Aaron and he said to him this, "What did these people do to you that you led them into such a great sin?" Aaron's answer, "Do not be angry, my Lord. You know how prone these people are to evil. They said to me, 'Make us gods who will go before us.'" Aaron says, "Moses, the people made me do it." And what we see here in Aaron at this point in his life, he is more interested in pleasing people than he is God. And I think this is something we can watch for early in our relationships to know whether someone's going to be a person of value or not. I had a series of dating relationships before I met Andrea. And in fact, the girlfriend that I had just before Andrea and I started dating, there were some integrity issues. I'll just say it that way. I mean, I found that again and again, whenever she found herself in a jam, she found it very easy to get out of the jam by lying her way out, right? And I didn't mind that as much at first because I thought, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Until she started doing that with me, and that's when I realized it was not going well. And so we ended up breaking up, and a number of months later, I found myself interested in Andrea. Andrea and I worked at the same church, and she was a youth pastor there. I was like the college, post-college pastor, and Andrea and I went to the same grad school at the time, and in fact, in addition to all that, Andrea was a barista at this coffee house off campus. And so I had been getting to know her a little bit, and I was attracted to her, and I found myself just kind of going to this coffee house a little bit to be around her even more, even though at the time I didn't really like coffee. It was too bitter for me. And so what I would do is I would go in and we'd talk for a while, you know, behind the counter. And then I felt like I had to order something. So I would order the sweetest drink you could get because I didn't like coffee, a vanilla mocha. But even then, that wasn't sweet enough for me. And so I'd order it with an extra shot of vanilla put into it. Well, here's what I would notice Andrea do. She would charge me 30 cents for the extra shot. And I would think to myself, are you kidding me? We're friends. I mean, we work at the same church. We go to school together. I'm interested in you. I'm dropping hints. I'm sensing you're interested in me. And you're going to charge me 30 cents for vanilla that no one knows is missing? In fact, at one point I said to her, you're like the co-manager of this place. You can make the choice to comp me the vanilla if you want to. But she didn't, because she didn't think it was right. She's not the owner. It's somebody else's vanilla. That would not be the right thing to do. This was the moment I knew for sure that I wanted to ask her out. Because I had learned through bad relationships what it was to find a good one, what I was looking for. And what I was looking for was not someone who liked me, who wanted to please me, even someone who would be committed to me. I wanted someone who was more interested in pleasing God. I wanted to date someone, be in a relationship with someone of true value. Okay, Zipporah does that for Moses. Aaron does not do that. And you don't have to wait to get into a relationship to find out if someone will bring value. You know what? You don't have to wait at all. You can just start noticing right away if they're a God pleaser or if they're a people pleaser. All right, the next thing, people of value will bring fulfillment and not frustration. Let's go forward one more slide. People of value will bring fulfillment and not frustration. So, you know, in this story, Moses comes down the mountain, and I didn't read you this part. He sees what's happening down there, and he's got these two big new stone tablets, right? He smashes them to bits on the ground. And then he's got to go back up the mountain later, make the tablets all over again. This is a moment of frustration. Aaron has brought frustration. Okay. Many times in our lives, we allow people who only bring us frustration, only frustration, to stay very close to us. Why do we do that? Again, because we believe that we can't make it without them. We can't do without them. We need them. Or we think that we owe them. That's a big one, especially if someone's in our family, like we're in a family business together. We think, I've got a responsibility to stay committed to them, even though they keep messing up my potential, my fulfilling of what God wants me to do. And you know, that leaves you frustrated because you just feel stuck. And the matter of the fact is, it is okay to let some of those relationships distance. We're going to talk more about that in a few weeks, what that looks like and how we do that distancing in a God-honoring way, what it means to love someone and separate from them a little bit at the same time. But here's what you've got to know today. Relationships of value should be incredibly fulfilling, not frustrating. Now, let me just kind of time out there because we all frustrate each other, right? People of value will frustrate you too. If I distance myself from everyone who frustrates me, there will be no one left. Every relationship comes with frustration. That doesn't mean get a divorce. It doesn't mean give away your kids, stop talking to your parents. I'm just saying, people who have a habit or a history of causing trouble in their lives and in all of their relationships, they will not likely provide you a rewarding relationship or help you fulfill your destiny. Now, as I say that, you know, we believe it's never too late to become who you might have been. That's one of our values as a church. We believe that the person who frustrates can change, they can become something different. But what we don't have as a value is that you personally force someone to become something different. Or that you walk alongside them while they hurt you, while you hope that they will become something different. I mean, that's God's job. It's not your job. And it's their job to let God change them. And here's the truth we don't say often enough in church. Sometimes the thing that's keeping you from becoming the thing you might have been is someone else who refuses to become the thing that they might have been. And you can't let that stop you. Okay, last thing we see in this Moses story about how to choose people of value. People of value take great joy in helping prepare others for greatness instead of taking pride in their own accomplishments. So, I didn't read you this part, but Aaron, right after he's built this golden calf, he sees how well everyone's responding to it, and he feels so good about it. He decides to build an altar right next to it, and he creates a festival where people can come and celebrate the idol. They're going to make sacrifices because he's proud. He's excited about what he's done. All right, Zipporah, after she saves Moses' life, we barely ever hear about her again. She simply does what needs to be done to make Moses great, and then she just goes about her business. And we don't know. All we can know is speculate, but it's likely because she finds joy in her love for God and her love for her husband. Okay, valuable people in your life do not stop to call attention to all that they have done for you. Yeah, they might be aware of it, but they're happy to help you reach your goals and live your dreams, and they take as much joy in helping you get to the destination as you do in being there. So let me just kind of bring this around and ask you a few questions. Who are the most valuable people in your life? In light of what we talked about today, what true value is, not who do you need, right? Not who's been there the longest, but real value, like pursuing God first and bringing you fulfillment and preparing you for greatness. In light of that, who are the valuable people in your world? Who's done something significant for you to get where you are? And here's a question. Have you thanked them? Maybe this week, maybe today, that's what you're supposed to do. Say thank you to the valuable people in your world, the truly valuable people. Here's another question. Is there anyone in your life that you think you need, but they're causing you frustration and they're kind of pushing your destiny on a detour and you're shifting because of them? Do you need to consider whether or not you need to position this relationship so that you don't get further off track, so you can begin fulfilling whatever promise God's called you to? I'll tell you, make sure you're here in 2 Sundays, because we're going to be real specific about how to do this, how to add some distance. And then last question, and you had to know this question was coming. When you think about who you are, what needs to change in you? What skills do you need to develop? Who do you need to become so you can be more valuable to others? All right, we're out of time. Thanks for coming today. We'll see you next week, Father's Day. We got a fun service planned.